Resizing 7.62 NATO, some 22 options for 2018, and the Bushnell XRS Gen 2, this week on Mail Call Mondays. I'm John McQuay with 8541 Tactical, and this is Mail Call Mondays, the show that answers your questions about precision rifles, optics, and equipment. Welcome to another Mail Call Mondays, and we're going to kick it off with our first question from Andrew from Patreon. If you guys want to learn a little bit more about Patreon, we will leave a link down below. It's a great way for you guys to help support the content that you know and love. We would love to have you as our patrons. Andrew asks, can you resize 7.62 by 51 brass to 308? Well, 7.62 by 51 is also commonly known as 7.62 NATO, and a lot of surplus ammunition is 7.62 NATO versus 308 Winchester. Now, the main difference between the two is really the pressures with which the cases are loaded to. There are some dimensional differences in headspace itself, but those are usually within the manufacturing tolerances that you see between different rifles. Only really tight chambers will generally have a problem with one cartridge or the other. Most reloading dies are set up for 308, so then you can take that cartridge, and when you run it through your reloading process, your resizing process, you are generally back to 308 spec. And depending upon how you set up your reloading dies, you can resize that back to 308 SAMI spec ammunition. So you can reload 7.62 brass, military spec brass, military surplus brass, and you can reload it right back to 308 dimensions, just like you would get commercial 308 brass. So if you have a line on surplus brass, then that may be a great option. Now, one thing that I would caution you on is a lot of these 7.62 NATO brass that's floating around out there that is military surplus brass, that stuff has been fired through machine guns, and it can be torn up, it can be worn out, it can be not the greatest stuff in the world. Now, if you come across 7.62 NATO precision rifle brass, then that stuff can be very good. You can get some good results from it. It's not going to be as good as Lapua or Norma or some of that high-end brass, but for what we do for precision rifle gaming, it's probably going to be just fine. So it is absolutely possible to resize 7.62 by 51 or 7.62 NATO brass to utilize in a 308 bolt gun or a 308 semi-automatic rifle. No problems at all. I've done it in the past. I just don't do it a lot here normally because I have a ton of Federal 308 once fired precision rifle brass. So, Andrew, thanks for the question, and I hope that answered it for you. Now, next, I want to talk about some of the upcoming options for 2018 for 22 long rifle. The NRL 22 game seems to be in full swing, and that seems to be evident by more manufacturers wanting to produce products that are geared towards that game. We just got an announcement that Volkhortsen is coming back out with the Summit 22 rifle, and this is a really, really interesting rifle that I can't wait to get my hands on. PWS made this action back in the day, and it basically ends up being a straight pull or a biathlon style 22 bolt gun. So instead of having a rotating bolt where you lift the bolt, pull it to the rear, push it back forward, and lock it back down, the Summit utilizes a straight pull type action. It's actually a toggle action, and it has a bolt handle that comes straight out the side, and you just grab the bolt handle and pull it back and then push it back forward, and it levers forward and back to operate the action on the rifle. Now, the big benefit of the Summit action is it is a Ruger 10/22 pattern action. So it should drop right into 10/22 stocks, it should utilize 10/22 barrels, and it should utilize 10/22 trigger components. Now, I say should because at this point we haven't got a chance to talk to Volkhortsen, and I don't know if they made any tweaks or any changes that would negate any of that part. But that is really exciting for me because there are a ton of parts already out for those guns, and even Macmillan is making stocks for the 10/22. So you can go high-end, you can go mid-end, you can grab a Titan 10/22 stock from Victor Company and throw it on that rifle, and it should alleviate some of the problems that we were having in cold weather with the 1022. So it's really a great overall option, I think. And I can't wait to get my hands on it and actually get out and shoot one. We'll talk to Volkwartzen when we go down to the SHOT Show and see if we can get more information on the gun, and hopefully at some point we can get a sample. Now, of course, it is on the expensive side. If you go on Volkwartzen's site right now and you look at their ready-to-roll rifle in a Magpul Hunter stock, you're looking at $1,150. That is a ton of cash for a 22 rimfire rifle. I realize that's well outside of a lot of people's budgets. However, when you look at the top-end open-class rifles that guys are shooting in NRL 22, that is still under what some of those rifles are coming in at as the overall build price on them. So it's an option for that open-class end of it, that guy that really wants to have a top-notch rifle. So hopefully we'll get our hands on one, see how well the action works, how quick it is to operate, and see how well it shoots overall. Now, if you don't really have the ability to go for that top-end, you know, $1,200 rifle, then Tika has announced the T1X rimfire rifle. And Tika has produced a lot of really high-quality rifles. Unfortunately, we haven't done a lot with them here. I hope to rectify that this year. But they do produce a quality rifle, and their actions are really smooth and really fast. They usually utilize a 60-degree bolt throw. I don't know if the rimfire will have a 60-degree bolt throw. I really, really hope so. That would make a really quick bolt-action rifle, and it would feel really, really nice. The price point on the T1X is going to be right around that $500 mark, so really reasonable. It's still going to be a little bit more expensive than the base class allows for NRL 22, but hopefully we'll see NRL 22 include some of these new rifles in the base class exemption, so guys can just pick up that rifle and roll with it. I don't know a whole lot about the T1X. Again, it is on our list for SHOT Show to go check out, and hopefully they will have them out at range day or at media day so we can actually get some live fire time with them. But that is definitely high on the list for us to check out. And then next, we need to mention the Ruger Precision Rimfire. This is a really, overall, an interesting rifle. It looks like a Ruger American Action in a chassis system, but I think there are some extra things that they put in there that brings it apart from the Ruger American. Now, the Ruger Precision Rimfire does utilize 10/22 magazines, and it does have kind of a chassis system, but it comes in at a $529 MSRP. So that is a really low cost. And looking at that, you can notice they did some things to try to save some money on it. Like, first of all, the chassis system on it is mostly polymer. The stock system, the risers and all that are very reminiscent of the Ruger Precision Rifle, the full-size centerfire rifle, but where a lot of the buttstock on the RPR is aluminum. The most of the buttstock on the rimfire is looks like glass-filled polymer. So it's going to feel a little bit cheaper, going to feel a little bit lighter. But again, we're talking about a $529 price point. The big thing that I'm interested in is that adjustable comb and adjustable length of pull that will allow you to set it up for a lot of different shooters. And it does appear to have a removable AR-type pistol grip. So those features combined with the 10/22 magazine, so you've got plentiful magazine options and 10-round magazine options that are low profile, it does appear to be a really interesting competition-oriented rifle. It does have a free-float tube, so you'll be able to have quite a few different options on support and bipods and barricade stops and all that kind of stuff. One thing that I did take note of that is really interesting is it does seem to have an adjustable bolt throw on it. The literature that I've read so far seems to state that you can either run it with a short 22 bolt throw, because you realize these rifles only have to go back a little bit to be able to chamber the next cartridge. You don't have to have that full throw like you would to chamber a larger centerfire cartridge. So generally, that has been my criticism of using a 22 bolt gun as a trainer, is that you get used to that really short throw and you can short stroke a center fire and not pick up the next cartridge, cause jams in it, all that kind of stuff. Well, the Ruger Precision Rimfire appears to have a bolt throw that you can switch between the normal 22 and a full-length centerfire type bolt throw. So you can run that bolt further back and further forward, which makes a ton of sense in a training rifle. If Ruger is positioning the Ruger Precision Rimfire to be a trainer for the Ruger Precision Rifle, I think that is an absolutely amazing idea with this low price point. Now, what I would really like to see is I would like to see the barrel on the Ruger Precision Rimfire be a quick change type barrel or easily swappable with the barrels like you have on the 10-22. Now, again, reading the literature, I think it's not going to be a 10-22 style barrel. I think it's going to be something else, but it does appear that they are making the barrel so it is easy to change at home. So we'll actually see when that rifle comes out. I've got some calls in to try to actually put my hands on one as soon as they are commercially available. They should be available before we go to SHOT Show, but if not, again, I hope to sneak down to Ruger's booth and actually put my hands on one. Hopefully, we'll get to talk to some of the engineers and find out how the guts are laid out. So if you got any questions on that, please go ahead and drop it in the comment section down below. So that is the three top 22 rifles that I'm interested in for 2018. Hopefully, as we go along, some more stuff will come out. If you guys have some other rifles that you're interested in or that you want us to hunt down while we're at SHOT Show, then please leave it in the comment section down below. We're still kind of doing our pre-SHOT Show scouting to try to figure out who we're going to hit. We've got a lot of meetings already scheduled, but there's still a lot of time to sneak around to other booths and see what is out there. So now I'm going to take a minute and talk about the rifle that I have sitting in front of me. This is a Savage Mark II BTVS. I picked this up quite a while back when I wanted to get back into rimfire shooting and I wanted a rimfire repeater. Now, I have a Remington 581. Shown it a couple of years back on a couple of our episodes here, and that was actually my field rifle when I was a boy that I took around. I went rabbit hunting with it, shot soda cans in my grandparents' backyard. You know, all the fun stuff that boys do with 22 rifles. My father initially put a single shot adapter into it, so I had to learn discipline and control because I only had one shot in the rifle. A lot of my hunting I did with only one shot in the rifle. And now, you know, I'm back into magazine fed. So I didn't want to take the 581 out with its short stock and its low comb and try to modify it to be able to set it up to be able to shoot tactical tile style stuff or just regular plinking with a scope. So instead, I went and I bought the BTVS. Now, this is before we had any idea about NRL 22. It was just basically to see if I was still having fun with a 22 and to give me a little bit of training with the 22. Well, I picked this up because it was kind of on sale. I got a good deal on it. I didn't really like the thumb hole stock, but it was one of those things that I could live with. Well, the more that I've shot this, the more that the thumb hole stock has really annoyed me. It's a beautiful stock. It really is well-designed. I haven't beat it up or damaged it any, but it just doesn't fit for what I need to do now. And I decided I really wanted to see how well this bolt gun would work for NRL 22. So I did a little bit of hunting, and now I've got a little bit of a project in the works. The first thing I did was I went and picked up a Boyd's Pro Varmint stock. Now, this is just their basic black painted stock. It is laminated wood. It is nothing special. It's not polymer or any of that. But it is pretty much the same thing as the stock that is currently on here, just in a different shape. Now, this gives me the more tactical vertical pistol grip, like you see on the Titan 10-22 that I run on our 10-22. It has a comb up here, or sorry, not a comb, a tang area here that will allow me to float my thumb up there like I prefer. And it has a higher comb here. So we'll see when we get things on. More than likely, I'm going to need some spacers because I don't think it's quite as high as the comb on this rifle. You see, this is almost straight, whereas this drops down a little bit. So we're probably going to have to throw some Victor Company spacers on here and get that cheek riser going. But overall, it is a fairly stiff stock. There's really no flex in it, but it is a wood stock, so we may end up having to bed it eventually. Another problem that I ran into with this rifle is the Weaver mounts that it comes with are really a bad specification. They have really shallow cross bolt slots in them. So with the cheap Weaver rings that I have on here, and this is just a Walmart Centerpoint scope that I've got dropped on here for now, with the cheap Weaver rings, it mounted just fine, but trying to take any of our other Picatinny spec rails or ring mounts or anything wouldn't go on here. So I went and grabbed a EGW Picatinny spec scope mount. So this will replace the two-piece base that I have on here. And this base will give us a whole lot more options as far as scope mounting than the factory setup. So if you want to run one of these rifles, make sure it is a Picatinny base. And there are a lot of options for the Mark II that come with Picatinny bases already. I did have to pick up some 10-round magazines. I just grabbed two of them, but if you grab five, that will be enough for an entire NRL match. The rifle does come with 5-round magazines, but that really isn't going to cut it for an NRL 22 competition. And then one other thing that really wasn't mandatory that I thought was kind of cool is DI Products Inc., or DIP, makes these really interesting bottom metal options for the Savage Mark II. Now, the first thing is they have this 1/8 inch thick bottom metal that goes around the magazine area, and it's part of what the action screws go through. And so it really stiffens things up down there versus the really thin sheet metal that the factory piece comes with. They also produce this nice aluminum oversized winter trigger guard. And I thought this was really cool because a lot of the weather I'm shooting in right now is pretty cold. I prefer to wear gloves, and this just opens the trigger area up a little bit more, and it's a little bit beefier piece than the factory Savage piece. Now, one thing that I will caution you with is all these mods do knock this rifle out of base class and put it into open class. I haven't talked to the guys at NRL 22 yet to see if just swapping the stock from the original thumb hole to the Boyds would knock it out of base class, because the Mark II does have this stock option from the factory in a couple of their different rifles. So you can get the Mark II with the Pro Varmint stock from Savage from the factory, and that would be a base class rifle. However, since this rifle didn't come with it and I'm swapping this stock onto it, technically by the rules, it would kick it out of base class and put it into open class. Now, when I start swapping bottom metal and trigger guards and stuff like that, I do believe that knocks it out of base class as well. But when we start putting things on and checking this rifle out, I'll come back and report to you on where the rifle will actually end up in the class. I am going to put a better optic on here. This Centerfire Walmart scope, believe it or not, actually would work if you are just trying to get into NRL shooting. It's really cheap. It's in the bubble pack, hanging on the wall in the sporting goods section in Walmart. It is a second focal plane, so you pretty much just have to shoot it like a fixed 16 power scope if you want to use the reticle. The parallax does adjust fairly close in, is an adjustable objective, so the parallax adjusts up here. The turrets are total and complete trash. They have these little locking rings down here. They're not accurate. They don't track well. There's tons of lash. Everything bad I can say about a turret, I can say about these turrets. However, you can get it zeroed. You can lock the turrets down and leave them alone and just use the mil dot reticle that is in the scope to get your holdovers for shooting. So if you really need a down and dirty scope and you have like no money to spend, then this center point will work. I definitely can't recommend it for guys that even have a couple $100 to spend on a scope, but if you are just, you know, picking out couch change to try to go shoot, then this is an option, and it's probably going to be better than a lot of the stuff that I've seen show up where, you know, it's a little 3x9 scope or something of that nature. This will actually allow you to see those little targets that you need to engage when they're all beat up and the paint's all blown off of them. So again, some options there, but I'm going to do some facelift on this rifle, and we'll come back and we'll talk to you about exactly how it works. I'm actually considering changing out the trigger on this as well. I'm not really a big fan of the AccuTrigger. I don't like this little trigger blade in here. It works kind of like a two-stage trigger. It works just fine in the cold because I can feel when I press the blade down and come to a stop on the trigger before it actually releases. But it really has not been my preference. And I've noticed on this rifle that if I try to dial the trigger pull down to where I think it should be, then a lot of times I have problems with the trigger going into its safe mode when I close the bolt rapidly, those kind of things, which it's just an issue that you have to deal with the AccuTrigger. So that is an overall look and an update on what I'm going to do with the Savage. I'm going to break this out into its own video when we actually do the upgrades and we take it out and see how it works. But I can tell pretty much right away I'm going to need comb spacers for this guy before we even get started. Now, one last thing I want to talk about is this guy right here. We got this in from Bushnell to take a look at. This is the XRS-2, and this is a 4.5 to 30 power rifle scope. I've been a big fan of the XRS for quite some time, and this is the next generation of the XRS. It took a lot of the things that I liked about the XRS and carried it over, and it fixed a lot of the things that I didn't like about the XRS. Some really cool things, just real quick. I have complained for a long time that a lot of manufacturers have gone to these fast focus eyepieces, which is a huge pain because they can creep. You stick a scope cap on here and the scope cap will slowly get knocked to one side or to the other, and you will lose your ocular focus, which controls how clear your reticle appears to your eyeball. I much prefer the old style locking eyepieces. Well, Bushnell apparently has listened to its end users and they put a locking ring on here. So you get the advantages of the fast focus eyepiece, but you also get a locking ring. So once you get it dialed in, you can lock it down. Now, if you don't prefer to lock it down, you can leave this ring loose and you still have all the benefits of the fast focus eyepiece. They also integrated a cattail into the magnification ring. Now, the magnification ring on ours is fairly stiff. It's not going to get bumped and move on its own, but the cattail definitely helps with those quick magnification changes. Now, it has been sitting out here in the shop, so the scope is pretty cold. As it warms up, I expect that that will move a little bit easier. They still did retain the pull and push locking system on their turrets, and it does still take a little wiggle to get that guy to lock all the way down. Sometimes it doesn't want to smoothly lock down. But the nice part is I very rarely actually dial for windage, so I'm going to leave this turret locked down most of the time. The only other thing that would be an advantage would to be see an actual capped turret, but I think the locking turret, it's going to work just fine. They deleted the locking feature from the elevation turret, which I think is kind of unneeded. With the really tall turrets that were on the XRS, it was a nice feature to have because they could easily get turned. They reduced the profile on the turrets. They're much lower profile now. So I think getting rid of that locking feature, it'll work out just fine. You don't have to fight with it anymore. If you all of a sudden realize that you need to turn it, you can just reach up and turn it. They changed the knurling on the turrets. It's much more aggressive now, which may be a good thing, it may be a bad thing. A lot of it's going to be personal preference. The scope does feel like it weighs a little bit more, but I haven't put it on a scale yet, and it's hard to tell because they've got these big bulky Weaver rings that were mounted on this when I came out of the box. The parallax is infinity down to 75 yards, so sorry, you're not going to be using this for NRL 22 matches. It would be a little bit of an overkill, but you're not going to be able to get that close focus with the parallax on this guy. This one does come with the H59 turret or the G2 that we have in here right now. I'd actually take a look through it because I couldn't remember which reticle that we got in this. But this one does have the G2 reticle, and the H59 is an option. Now, this guy isn't cheap. It runs about $2,300, but that seems to be about that area for the upper mid-range optics. And overall, we will get it out and take a look at it, kick the tires on it, and see if they improved some of the other things that I disliked about the XRS, mainly the chromatic aberration and the coatings on the optic. So I will be really interested to see if they've improved the optical clarity and the chromatic aberration on this guy versus the original XRS. So that will be coming. We've got to get mounted up and get it out to the field and do some shooting with it. We don't just look through these guys out the front window and then give you a review. I've got to run tracking tests on it and hopefully put it on some harder recoiling rifles to make sure everything works just fine. So if you guys have any questions on the XRS2, go ahead and drop them down in the comments section below. And that's going to do it for this Mail Call Mondays. If you have questions over anything we've discussed, please leave them in the comments section below or send them to us on Facebook or Twitter. If you're listening to us on your favorite podcast app, then you can send questions to us at 8541tactical@gmail.com. If you like the show, please make sure you like, share, and subscribe. And until next time, get out and shoot.